Page from Mythica, The Taker of Secrets. Zsa Anat, creator and corrupter, unique among the unmade. Creator. Her twisted creations are her beloved children. Her admiration of the spren of our world inspires her. Corrupter. She seeks the children of honor and the children of cultivation. With one touch, she corrupts.
77. Storm Shelter. Something must be done about the remnants of Odium's forces. The Parsh, as they are now called, continue their war with zeal, even without their masters from damnation. From Drawer 3020, First Emerald. Kaladin dashed across the street. "Wait!" he shouted. "One more here!" Ahead, a man with a thin mustache struggled to close a thick wooden door. It stuck partway open, however, giving just enough time for Kaladin to slip through. The man swore at him, then pulled the door shut. Made of dark stumpweight wood, it made a muffled thunk. The man did up the locks, then stepped back and let three younger men place a thick bar into the settings.
"Cutting that close, armsman," the mustachioed man said, noting the wall guard patch on Kaladin's shoulder.
"Sorry,"
Kaladin said, handing the man a few spheres as a cover charge. "But the storm is still a few minutes away."
"Can't be too careful with this new storm," the man said. "Be glad the door got stuck."
Syl sat on the hinges, legs hanging over the sides. Kaladin doubted it had been luck. Sticking people's shoes to the stone was a classic windspren trick. Still, he did understand the doorman's hesitance. Everstorms didn't quite match up with scholarly projections. The previous one had arrived hours earlier than anyone had guessed it would. Fortunately, they tended to blow in slower than high storms. If you knew to watch the sky, there was time to find shelter. Kaladin ran his hand through his hair and started deeper into the wine house. This was one of those fashionable places that, while technically a storm shelter, was used only by rich people who had come to spend the storm enjoying themselves. It had a large common room and thick walls of stone blocks. No windows, of course. A bartender kept people liquored near the back, and a number of booths ringed the perimeter. He spotted Shallan and Adolin sitting in a booth at the side. She wore her own face, but Adolin looked like Melaran Kahl, a tall, bald man around Adolin's height. Kaladin lingered, watching Shallan laugh at something Adolin said, then poke him, with her safe hand, in the shoulder. She seemed completely enthralled by him. And good for her. Everyone deserved something to give them light these days. But what about the glances she shot him on occasion? Times when she didn't quite seem to be the same person. A different smile, an almost wicked look to her eyes. "You're seeing things," he thought to himself. He strode forward and caught their attention, settling into the booth with a sigh. He was off duty and free to visit the city. He'd told the others he'd find his own shelter for the storm, and only had to be back in time for evening post-storm patrol.
"Took you long enough, bridge boy," Adolin said.
"Lost track of time," Kaladin said, tapping the table. He hated being in storm shelters. They felt too much like prisons.
Outside, thunder announced the Everstorm's arrival. Most people in the city would be inside their homes, the refugees instead in public storm shelters. This for-pay shelter was sparsely occupied, only a few of the tables or booths in use. That would give privacy to talk, fortunately, but it didn't bode well for the proprietor. People didn't have spheres to waste.
"Where's Elokar?" Kaladin asked.
"Elokar is working on last-minute plans through the storm," Adolin said. "He's decided to reveal himself tonight to the Light Eyes he's chosen. And he's done a good job, Cal. We'll at least have some troops because of this. Fewer than I'd like, but something."
"And maybe another Night Radiant?" Shallan asked, glancing at Kaladin. "What have you found?"
He quickly caught them up on what he'd learned. The wall guard might have a soulcaster and was definitely producing food somehow. It had seized emerald stores in the city, a fact he'd recently discovered.
Azure is tough to read, Kaladin finished. She visits the barracks every night but never talks about herself. Men report seeing her sword cut through stone, but it has no gemstone. I think it might be an honor blade, like the weapon of the assassin in white.
Huh, Adolin said, sitting back. You know, that would explain a lot.
My platoon has dinner with her tonight, after evening patrol, Kaladin said. I intend to see what I can learn.
A serving girl came for orders, and Adolin bought them wine. He knew about light-eyed drinks and, without needing to be told, ordered something without a touch of alcohol for Kaladin. He'd be on duty later. Adolin did get Shallan a cup of violet, to Kaladin's surprise. As the serving girl left with the order, Adolin reached out toward Kaladin.
Let me see your sword.
My sword? Kaladin said, glancing toward Syl, who was huddling near the back of the booth and humming softly to herself, a way of ignoring the sounds of the Everstorm which rumbled beyond the stones.
Not that sword, Adolin said. Your side sword.
Kaladin glanced down to where the sword stuck out beside his seat. He'd almost forgotten he was wearing the thing, which was a relief. The first few days, he'd bumped the sheath into everything. He unbuckled it and set it on the table for Adolin.
Good blade, the prince said. Well maintained. It was in this condition when they assigned it to you?
Kaladin nodded. Adolin drew it and held it up.
It's a little small, Shallan noted.
It's a one-handed sword, Shallan. Close-range infantry weapon. A longer blade would be impractical.
Longer, like shard blades? Kaladin asked.
Well, yes. They break all kinds of rules.
Adolin waved the sword through a few motions, then sheathed it.
I like this High Marshal of yours.
It's not even her weapon, Kaladin said, taking it back. You boys done comparing your swords? Shallan asked. Because I've found something.
She thumped a large book onto the table.
One of my contacts finally tracked down a copy of Hesse's Mythica. It's a newer book and has been poorly received. It attributes distinct personalities to the Unmade.
Adolin lifted the cover, peeking in.
So, anything about swords in it?
Oh, hush, she said, then batted his arm in a playful and somewhat nauseating way. Yes, it was uncomfortable to watch the two of them.
Kaladin liked them both, just not together. He forced himself to look around the room, which was occupied by light eyes trying to drink away the sounds of the storm. He tried not to think of refugees who would be packed into stuffy public shelters, clutching their meager possessions and hoping some of what they were forced to leave behind would survive the storm.
The book, Shallan said, claims there were 9 unmade. That matches the vision Dalinar saw, though other reports speak of 10 unmade. They're likely ancient spren, primal, from the days before human society and civilization. The book claims the 9 rampaged during the desolations, but says not all were destroyed at Ahari Eriam. The author insists that some are active today. I find her vindicated, obviously, by what we've experienced.
And there's one of these in the city, Adolin said.
I think, Shallan said. I think there might be 2, Adolin. Sia-Anat, the Taker of Secrets, is one. Again, Dalinar's visions mention her. Sia-Anat's touch corrupted other spren, and we're seeing the effects of that here.
And the other one? Adolin asked.
A shirt, Marn, Shallan said softly.
She slipped a little knife from her satchel and began to absently carve at the top of the table.
The heart of the revel. The book has less to say on him, though it speaks of how he leads people to indulge in excess.
2 unmade, Kaladin said.
Are you sure?
Sure as I can be.
Wit confirmed the second, and the way the queen acted leading up to the riots seems an obvious sign. As for the Taker of Secrets, We can see the corrupted Spren ourselves.
How do we fight two? Kaladin asked.
How do we fight one? Adolin said. In the tower we didn't so much fight the thing as frighten it off. Shallan can't even say how she did that. What does the book say about fighting them?
Nothing.
Shallan shrugged, blowing at her little carving on the table. It was of a corrupted glory Spren in the shape of a cube, which another patron had attracted. The book says if you see a Spren the wrong color, you're supposed to immediately move to another town.
There's kind of an army in the way, Kaladin said.
Yes. Amazingly, your stench hasn't cleared them out yet.
Shallan started leaping through her book. Kaladin frowned. Comments like that were part of what confused him about Shallan. She seemed perfectly friendly one moment, and then she'd snap at him the next, while pretending it was merely part of normal conversation. But she didn't talk like that to others, not even in jest.
What is wrong with you, woman? He thought.
They'd shared something intimate in the chasms back on the shattered plains. A high storm huddled together, and words. Was she embarrassed by that? Was that the reason she snapped at him sometimes? If that was so, how did one explain the other times, when she watched him and grinned, when she winked in a sly way?
Hesse reports stories of the Unmade not only corrupting Spren, but corrupting people, Shallan was saying. Maybe that's what's happening with the palace. We'll know more after infiltrating the cult tonight.
I don't like you going alone, Adolin said.
I won't be alone. I'll have my team.
One washwoman and two deserters, Kaladin said. If Gaz is anything to judge by, Shallan, you shouldn't put too much trust in those men. Shallan raised her chin.
At least my soldiers knew when to get away from the war camps, as opposed to just standing around letting people fling arrows at them.
We trust you, Shallan, Adolin said,
eyeing Kaladin as if to say, drop it.
And we really need a look at that oath gate.
What if I can't open it? Shallan asked. What then?
We have to retreat back to the Shattered Plains, Kaladin said.
Elokar won't leave his family.
Then Drahi Skaar and I rush the palace, Kaladin said. We fly in at night, enter through the upper balcony, grab the queen and the young prince. We do it all right before the high storm comes, then a lot of us fly back to Urethiru.
And leave the city to fall, Adolin said, drawing his lips to a line.
Can the city hold? Shallan asked. Maybe until we get back with a real army marched out here?
That would take months, Adolin said. And the wall guard is, what, 4 battalions?
5 in total, Kaladin said. 5,000 men? Shallan asked. So few?
That's large for a city garrison, Adolin said. The point of fortifications is to let a small number hold against a much larger force. But the enemy has an unexpected advantage. Voidbringers who can fly, and a city infested with their allies.
Yeah, Kaladin said. The wall guard is earnest, but they won't be able to withstand a dedicated assault. There are tens of thousands of Parshmen out there, and they're close to attacking. We don't have much time left. The Fused will sweep in to secure portions of the wall, and their armies will follow. If we're going to hold this city, we'll need Radiance and Shardbearers to even the odds.
Kaladin and Shallan shared a look. Their Radiance were not a battle-ready group. Not yet. Storms his men had barely taken to the skies. How could they be expected to fight those creatures who flew so easily upon the winds? How could he protect this city and protect his men? They fell silent, listening to the room shake with the sounds of thunder outside. Kaladin finished his drink, wishing it were one of Rock's concoctions instead, and flicked away an odd kremling that he spotted clinging to the side of the bench. It had a multitude of legs and a bulbous body with a strange tan pattern on its back. Disgusting. Even with the stresses to the city, the proprietor could at least keep this place clean.
Once the storm finally blew itself out, Shallan stepped from the winehouse, holding Adolin's arm. She watched Kaladin hurry off toward the barracks for evening patrol. she should probably be equally eager to get going. She still had to steal some food today, enough to satisfy the cult of moments when she approached them later in the evening. That should be easy enough. Vatha had taken to planning operations under Ishna's guidance and was proving quite proficient. Still, she lingered, enjoying Adolin's presence. She wanted to be here with him before it was time to be Vale. She didn't much care for him. Too clean-cut, too oblivious, too expected. She was fine with him as an ally, but wasn't the least bit interested romantically. Shallan held his arm, walking with him. People already moved through the city, cleaning up, more so they could scavenge than out of civic duty. They reminded her of kremlings that emerged after a storm to feast on the plants. Indeed, nearby, ornamental rock buds spat out vines in clusters beside doorways, a splatter of green vines and unfurling leaves set against the brown city canvas. One patch nearby had been struck and burned away by the Everstorm's red lightning. "I need to show you the Impossible Falls sometime," Adolin said. "If you watch them from the right angles, it looks like the water is flowing down along the tiers, then somehow right up onto the top again." As they walked, she had to step over a dead mink, sticking half out of a broken tree trunk. Not the most romantic of strolls, but it was good to hold on to Adolin's arm, even if he had to wear a false face. "Hey," Adolin said, "I didn't get to look through the sketchbook. You said you were going to show me."
"I brought the wrong one, remember? I had to carve on the table."
She grinned.
"Don't think I missed you going up and paying for the damage when I wasn't looking."
He grunted.
"People carve on bar tables. It happens all the time."
"Sure. Sure. It was a good carving, too."
"And you still think I shouldn't have done it?"
She squeezed his arm.
"Oh, Adolin Colin. You are your father's son. I won't do it again, all right?"
He was blushing. "I," he said, "was promised sketches. I don't care if it's the wrong sketchbook. I feel like I haven't seen any of your pictures for ages."
"There's nothing good in this one," she said, digging in her satchel. "I've been distracted lately."
He still made her hand it over, and secretly she was pleased. He started flipping through the more recent pictures, and though he noted the ones of strange Spren, he idled most on the sketches of refugees she'd done for her collection. A mother with her daughter, sitting in shadow, but with her face looking toward the horizon and the hints of a rising sun. A thick-knuckled man sweeping the area around his palette on the street. A young woman, light-eyed and hanging out a window, hair drifting free, wearing only a nightgown, with her hand tied in a pouch.
"Shallan," he said. "These are amazing. Some of the best work you've ever done."
"They're just quick sketches, Adolin."
"They're beautiful," he said, looking at another where he stopped. It was a picture of him in one of his new suits.
Shallan blushed. "Forgot that was there," she said, trying to get the sketchbook back. He lingered on the picture, then finally succumbed to her prodding and handed it back. She let out a sigh of relief. It wasn't that she'd be embarrassed if he saw the sketch of Kaladin on the next page. She did sketches of all kinds of people. But best to end on the picture of Adolin. Vale had been seeping through on that other one.
"You're getting better, if that's possible."
"Maybe. Though I don't know how much I can credit myself with the progress. Words of Radiance says that a lot of Lightweavers were artists."
"So the Order recruited people like you."
"Or the Surge Binding made them better at sketching, giving them an unfair advantage over other artists."
"I have an unfair advantage over other duelists. I have had the finest training since childhood. I was born strong and healthy, and my father's wealth gave me some of the best sparring partners in the world. My build gives me reach over other men.
Does that mean I don't deserve accolades when I win? You don't have supernatural help. You still had to work hard. I know you did. He put his arm around her, pulling her closer as they walked. Other Alethi couples kept their distance in public, but Adolin had been raised by a mother with a fondness for hugs. You know, there's this thing my father complains about. He asked what the use of shard blades was. I think they're pretty obviously for cutting people up. Without cutting them, actually. But why only swords? Father asks why the ancient Radiants never made tools for the people. He squeezed her shoulder. I love that your powers make you a better artist, Shallan. Father was wrong. The Radiants weren't just soldiers. Yes, they created incredible weapons, but they also created incredible art. And maybe, once this war is done, we can find other uses for their powers. Storms, his enthusiasm could be intoxicating. As they walked toward the tailor's shop, she was loath to part with him, though Vale did need to get on with her day's work. I can be anyone, Shallan thought, noticing a few joyspren blowing past, like a swirl of blue leaves. I can become anything. Adolin deserved someone far better than her. Could she become that someone? Craft for him the perfect bride? A woman that looked and acted as befitted Adolin Colin? It wouldn't be her. The real her was a bruised and sorry thing, painted up all pretty but inside a horrid mess. She already put a face over that for him. Why not go a few steps farther? Radiant. Radiant could be his perfect bride, and she did like him. The thought made Shallan feel cold inside. Once they were close enough to the tailor's shop that she didn't worry about him being safe as he walked back on his own, Shallan forced herself to pull out of his grip. She held his hand a moment with her free hand. I need to be going. You aren't to meet the cult until sunset. I need to steal some food first to pay them. Still, he held to her hand. What do you do out there, Shallan? Who do you become? Everyone, she said. Then she reached up and kissed him on the cheek. Thank you for being you, Adolin. Everyone else was taken already, he mumbled. Never stopped me. He watched her until she ducked around a corner, heart thumping. Adolin Colin in her life was like a warm sunrise. Vale started to seep out, and she was forced to acknowledge that sometimes she preferred the storm and the rain to the sun. She checked at the drop point, inside a corner of a building that was now rubble. Here, Red had deposited a pack that contained Vale's outfit. She grabbed it and went hunting a good place to change. The end of the world had come, but that seemed most true after a storm. Refuse strewn about. People who hadn't gotten to shelters moaning from fallen shacks or alongside streets. It was like each storm tried to wipe them off Roshar, and they only remained through sheer grit and luck. Now with two storms, it was even worse. If they defeated the Voidbringers, would the Everstorm remain? Had it begun to erode their society in a way that, win the war or not, would eventually end with them all swept out to sea? She felt her face changing as she walked, draining stormlight from her satchel. It rose in her like a flaring flame, before dimming to an ember as she became the people from the sketches Adolin had seen. The poor man, who tried doggedly to keep the area around his little pallet clean, as if to try to maintain some control over an insane world. The light-eyed girl who wondered what had happened to the joy of adolescence. Instead of her wearing her first hava to a ball, her family was forced to take in dozens of relatives from neighboring towns, and she spent the days locked away because the streets weren't safe. The mother with a child, sitting in darkness, looking toward the horizon and a hidden sun. Face after face, life after life. Overpowering, intoxicating, alive, breathing and crying and laughing and being. So many hopes, so many lives, so many dreams. She unbuttoned her hava up the side, then let it fall. She dropped her satchel, which thumped from the heavy book inside. She stepped forward in only her shift, safe hand uncovered, feeling the wind on her skin. She was still wearing an illusion, one that didn't disrobe, so nobody could see her. Nobody could see her. Had anyone ever seen her? She stopped on the street corner, wearing shifting faces and clothing, enjoying the sensation of freedom, clothed yet naked skin shivering at the wind's kiss. Around her, people ducked away into buildings, frightened. Just another Spren, Shallan Vale radiant thought. That's what I am. Emotion made carnal. She lifted her hands to the sides, exposed yet invisible. She breathed the breaths of a city's people. Pattern said, unweaving himself from her discarded dress. Shallan? Maybe, she said, lingering. Finally, she let herself slip fully into Vale's persona. She immediately shook her head and fetched the clothing and satchel. She was lucky it hadn't been stolen. Foolish girl. They didn't have time for prancing around from poem to poem. Vale found a secluded location beside a large, gnarled tree whose roots spread all the way along the wall in either direction. She quickly rearranged her underclothing, then put on her trousers and did up her shirt. She pulled on her hat, checked herself in a hand mirror, then nodded. Right then, time to meet up with Vatha. He was waiting at the inn where Wit had once stayed. Radiant retained hope that she'd meet him again there, for a more thorough interrogation. In the private room, away from the eyes of the fretting innkeeper, Vatha laid out a couple of spheres to light the maps he'd purchased. They detailed the manor she intended to hit this afternoon. They call it the mausoleum, Vatha explained as Vale sat. He showed her an artist's sketch he'd purchased, which was of the building's grand hall. Those statues are all soul cast, by the way. They're favored servants of the house, turned to storming stone. It's a sign of honor and respect among light eyes. It's creepy, Vatha said. When I die, burn my corpse up right good. Don't leave me staring for eternity while your descendants sip their tea. Vale nodded absently, placing Shallan's sketchbook on the table. Pick an alias from this. This map says the larder is on the outside wall. Time is tight, so we might want to do this one the easy way. Have Red make a distraction, then use Shallan's blade to cut us an opening right into the food. You know, they're said to have quite the fortune at the mausoleum. The Tenet family riches are... He trailed off as he saw her expression. No riches, then. We get the food to pay the cult. Then we get out. Fine. He settled on the image of the man sweeping around his pallet, staring at it. You know, when you reformed me from banditry, I figured I was done with stealing. This is different. Different how? We stole mostly food back then, too, Brightness. Just wanted to stay alive and forget. And do you still want to forget? He grunted. Nah, I suppose I don't. Suppose I sleep a little better now at night, don't I? The door opened and the innkeeper bustled in, holding drinks. Vatha yelped, though Vale turned with a droll expression. I believe, she said, I wanted to not be interrupted. I brought drinks! Which is an interruption, Vale said, pointing out the door. If we're thirsty, we'll ask. The innkeeper grumbled, then backed out the door, carrying his tray. He's suspicious, Vale thought. He thinks we were up to something with Wit, and wants to find out what. Time to move these meetings to another location, eh, Vatha? She looked back at the table and found someone else sitting there. Vatha was gone, replaced by a bald man with thick knuckles and a well-kept smock. Shallan glanced at the picture on the table, then at the drained sphere beside it, then back at Vatha. "Nice," she said. "But you forgot to do the back of the head, the part not in the drawing."
"What?"
Vatha asked, frowning. She showed him the hand mirror.
"Why'd you put his face on me?"
"I didn't," Vale said, standing. "You panicked, and this happened." Vatha prodded at his face, still looking in the mirror, confused. "I'll bet the first few times are always accidents," Vale said. She tucked the mirror away. "Gather this stuff up. We'll do the mission as planned, but tomorrow you're relieved of infiltration duty. I'll want you practicing with your stormlight instead."
"Practicing?"
He finally seemed to get it, his brown eyes opening widely.
"Brightness? I'm no storming radiant."
"Of course not. You're probably a squire. I think most orders had them. You might become something more. I think Shallan was making illusions off and on for years before she said the oaths. But then it's all kind of muddled in her head. I had my sword when I was very young, and..." She took a deep breath. Fortunately, Vale hadn't lived through those days. Pattern hummed in warning.
"Brightness," Vatha said. "Vale, you really think that I..."
"Storms?" He seemed like he was going to cry. She patted him on the shoulder. "We don't have time to waste. The cult will be waiting for me in 4 hours and expect a nice payment of food. You going to be all right?"
"Sure, sure," he said.
The illusion finally dropped, and the image of Vatha himself so emotional was even more striking.
"I can do this. Let's go steal from some rich people and give to some crazy people instead."